Are you searching for a deeper understanding of yourself and your place in the world? Do you yearn for more balance, more peace, and purpose in your life? Well, look no further than the Intuitive Revolution Podcast, your trusted source for holistic insights and intuitive guidance. I'm your host, Alicia Ferricelli, and I am ready to take you on a journey to inner peace and balanced well-being. Hi, friends. Welcome back to the Intuitive Revolution Podcast. I'm your host, Alicia Ferricelli. And today, I have the pleasure of introducing you to Joy Sowell, who happened to be a close friend who introduced me to energy healing and really got me started on my path to helping other people heal. Joy has a background in psychology with a concentration in trauma and addictions. She now serves business owners in matters of executive support and leadership development, focusing first on individual healing of the inner child and ancestral traumas, and further extending that healing as a ripple effect to your teams and clients. Joy has been in a personal and leadership development for 19 years, has seen a lot of things, worked and hired thousands of people, and has grown a lot through those experiences. However, she attributes her upbringing as being the biggest launching pad for her. She says it gave her a deep desire to heal herself and others and to listen to her inner knowing along the way, even if it meant rejection and understanding from others. Joy credits life's experience as being the most prominent qualification she has acquired. Though, she also holds a degree in psychology as well as certifications and qualifications in NLP, hypnosis, and a multitude of different energy healing modalities, as well as a long-time fascination and in-depth study of all body systems, the brain, and nervous system function, and how it relates to our society, mindsets, culture, and decision-making. Friends, get ready for an amazing episode. I'm so excited today to introduce everyone, my audience, to Joy. Joy has been an amazing inspiration and a kickstart to my journey, and I'm just so grateful for her, and I'm so grateful she's on here. So thank you so much for joining today, Joy.
Yeah, I'm really excited, and that's really humbling. You know, what you just said is very exciting and humbling. I'm like, oh, I'm so excited.
It's so true. On it. So speaking of, can you share your personal journey and how it led you to focus on inner child healing, ancestral healing, and connecting with source in your work?
Yeah, well, you know, we all have a story, right? And my upbringing, I don't think it's like super unique or anything, but it was traumatic, like many of us have. And even if we have really good childhoods, there's trauma there. Because really what trauma is I'm going a direction and then I'm knocked off the direction. And so I'm not who I thought I was, or things aren't the way I thought they were. That's really what trauma is. And so I certainly had my own share of that in my upbringing, and, you know, raised in religious environment. And I still am very, very, very serious about my faith, but it looks a lot different than it did, because I realized that there are things that existed there that really weren't what they ought to have been. And also, I have a real passion for people who otherwise have nowhere else to go with their stuff. What, like, really successful people, where do you go? Because my parents were in church leadership and they were also home-based missionaries. And so there's kind of this culture of hide things. So you don't want to share it, because if you do that, then people, you'll be exposed as the imposter and you're not really qualified to do what you're doing. And so I like to provide an environment for people that they can unravel, because everybody needs somewhere to unravel and kind of make sense of their stuff. And so in my personal story, in short, it was a lot of that trauma as a child in the religious environment and leadership environment that I mean, it really like broke me open to have a strong desire to provide a safer place for people.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit more about imposter syndrome, because that's such a huge thing. And I know that's one of your specialties and you've helped me personally through it. Yeah. What are some tips for people, if they're going through that, how can they start to really start facing that?
Yeah, it's so fascinating, because the lens that we look at ourselves through really has more to do with how we've made sense of our experiences. And so when we feel like we're not really qualified for something, it's not actually like our own thought, because truly, like, our pure selves are not going to think that or feel that, but it's the belief patterns that we've acquired throughout a lifetime and how we've made sense of our experiences that leads us to believe I'm not really qualified to do this. When really, like, you know, you come as a baby and all the possibility is there. And then someone at some point projects their belief about themselves, usually it's your parent or caretaker, onto you that you can't. because it was projected onto them. So that's just that they didn't have the tools. And then we have to learn how to have the tools at some point. So imposter syndrome, I just say, like, don't kill the imposter, kill the syndrome.
Ooh.
Because there actually is no imposter. Maybe you're not operating in alignment with yourself, but there is the syndrome, and that's the, like, that's a totally attached to your belief and what you believe your identity is within your experiences and your beliefs.
I know most people really go through that. I've honestly never met a business owner particularly that has not gone through.
Oh no.
I get it on a weekly basis. I'm like, what am I doing?
Well, I mean, even in the past week myself, you know, or the past several weeks, I, you know, there's just like this feeling that has come over me that's like, does what I do even matter? And, you know, like my conscious self is like, are you kidding me? You know, like, are you kidding me? You know, and, but this is also why I keep a file in my phone, like a note in my phone, that where I keep screenshots or I copy and paste stuff from people that have said, what you have done has completely changed my life. Because we're all going to forget at some point. And, you know, when you go through challenging situations, it makes you question, am I really good enough? Can I really handle it? And it's just really another layer of, it's like an invitation. It's another layer of, oh, you get to heal this. There's more. Congratulations. but it's, you know, I actually think that that's supposed to be a natural part of the process, is feeling like I'm not good enough, because it's just the layers of healing that we have to do throughout a lifetime.
Yeah, I love that. I think you were the one who introduced me to the layers of healing and how, you know, mm-hmm. you get to this point, most people think, oh, I'm going to heal and I'm going to be completely free of everything. And it's
uh-huh.
the case of that, because you're like, you turn back and you're like, you heal one thing and it's like, there's another thing to heal. And eventually you get to the point where it gets kind of exciting.
Yeah. Yeah. Because it's like a roller coaster, right? Like,
yeah.
Like at first you're like, I don't want to be on the dang roller coaster. But then at some point you're like, well, actually, like, roller coasters can be fun if I think that they're fun. And so, yeah, it becomes less about the trauma. And I think that in some cases we're kind of too trauma focused.
Mm-hmm.
We have to ride between focus on the trauma and focus on the regulation of ourselves, because you're always going to have something new coming at you that's going to be activating your old stuff and triggering something in the present. And that's a whole other conversation. Like, there's a lot there. But I think that as we're going through that stuff, it's, again, it's a prompt for us to realize healing is exhausting. It is like a lifelong thing, but it leads us to realize that I can actually be totally regulated, even though everything's not perfect yet. It's actually fun. Okay. It's not perfect. It doesn't matter.
Yes.
I'm cool without it.
Anyway, he wants to be perfect.
Right. That's right.
Yeah, awesome. So in your experience, how do early childhood experiences and ancestral traumas impact our intuition and overall well-being?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, it's like I said, we come as a baby and we're like kind of this perfect little, you know, at conception, there's like this perfect thing that happens, and we're even like a perfect vibrational match for our parents. And then we're not anymore, because it's just like all other relationships, you know, people come in and out of our lives at times, or, you know, you get married and you're married for like 20 years and then you turn around and you realize, oh gosh, this isn't the person I married. Well, yeah, because people shift and you can shift together, but we're perfect vibrational matches for parents, and then we aren't. And then we are kind of like the rest of our lives making sense of that and trying to determine, am I safe? Is it safe to be me? And there's a lot of subconscious questions going on that we don't even realize that we're asking. And so I think, you know, well, the ancestral stuff is one thing, and then inner child stuff. And then it's like how we perpetuate all of that throughout a lifetime. Like, we kind of are coming into agreement with certain things. We're going, oh yeah, it's kind of like, all right, heart disease runs in my family, so I'll probably get heart disease. You know, it's like that, you hear people say things like that.
Yeah.
And it's like, we're coming into agreement with certain things. Whereas like my father, you know, 12, 13 years ago, he says, well, heart disease runs in my family, so I'm going to find a way to not get heart disease. And that's a completely different mindset. And so your question, how do early childhood experiences and ancestral traumas impact our intuition, is that we're not really taught, first of all, like implicitly, how to access our inner knowing. Mm-hmm. Merely because our parents didn't know how to access it and they weren't taught.
Yeah.
And so it really is a personal responsibility that we get to take on. And we kind of get buried underneath the belief patterns and the mindsets and the emotions, because emotion is very sweeping and it kind of sucks you up into it. And so when we're doing the healing work, it allows us to settle enough to learn how, it's really relearning how to trust ourselves. So it isn't that like we never learned how to trust ourselves. No, we came into this world knowing. And then now it's up to us to be working our way back, because truthfully, you know that you can trust yourself. But we also have 1,000 voices scrolling through social media constantly. And, you know, if you have business and you're looking at 100 different ways you could do things, right? And you hear all these voices, and you know, hire all these different coaches to try to teach you how, but ultimately you already know the answer. So it's a lot of it is like getting rid of the noise. And so that's why healing is so important. Your inner child healing is important, ancestral healing, because it gets things quiet and still enough for us to hear what's really going on, so we can know, what does my soul already know to do?
Yes. I love that. You have to be still. We have to listen.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have to trust ourselves. I know that that's being what's given to us from childhood can be brought back.
No, it can't. But now we can reframe it.
Right.
And there are certain situations, even in my own childhood, I think, gosh, that was horrifying. But there's a system and a process in which we can reframe that even. And then, you know what, we realize, like, for instance, in the last couple of years, I went back to my childhood town. I took my kids there, and we're kind of walking around, and, you know, it really was like, I think I had a fairly terrifying childhood. Really, I did. But there was something about being back there and walking around my neighborhood and seeing my house and going into some of the businesses where I used to frequent, in the library where I used to escape to just to feel safe and educate myself. And that's where I started reading books about all this kind of stuff and the body and the mind, body mind stuff. And anyway, you know, walking around there and being there, it's like something shifted. And I went, gosh, all things considered, it was pretty dang good. And I really could have been like, I don't know, like kidnapped or something. And I was running around here and things could have been a lot worse.
Yeah.
It's like they always could have been a lot worse. And yet I was preserved through that. And I could really feel like a sense of almost like a divine protection and carrying of my child self.
Ooh.
And I really connected with that. And I brought it home, and it's like, I've never been able to think about my childhood the same since. It's like, wow, I was really protected.
Yeah.
Some bad things happened, but I was really protected.
Yeah. You're here to tell your story.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a big deal.
That's a big deal.
Yeah.
Big deal. Absolutely.
Awesome. You mentioned the importance of emotional regulation and nervous system regulation. Could you explain how these factors play a role in your ability or our ability to connect with our intuition?
Yeah. And this is a whole other thing that I think, again, if we focus too much on trauma and healing trauma, then we're focused on trauma.
Yeah.
And so when we focus on the regulation, like, okay, I know a lot of people that have done a ton of inner work. And then they come to me and they're like, why am I still incapable of like keeping my cool? Like something will trigger me and it pushes me over the edge and I start shouting, or, you know, like they become irate and filled with rage. And I certainly don't have any judgment for anybody over that, because I actually, the stance I take on emotion is that it's all really important. It's an important part of what launches us into the future, but also what draws us into the present. And so even rage, and I'm a person, I would say we all have like a safe place of emotion. You know, for some of us, it's anxiety. When we feel out of control, we come back to anxiety. or overwhelm or depression. In my case, it's anger. I'm like, I come right back to anger when I feel out of control. And I recognize that. And even to the point of rage, but here's what's actually going on, is the underlying emotion is most often fear. It's not rage. Mm-hmm. It's not anxiety. It's not overwhelm. It's fear. And because you're out of control, you can't control all the things. So when you identify, oh gosh, okay, I recognize that my rage, and I have tactics, you know, I destroy Amazon boxes, you know, keep those paper envelopes that I can rip up, snap pencils in half. I have a set of pencils just for that purpose, you know,
I
like
love cheap that. You love
because
it.
I know. And I even teach my kids that, you know, like, hey, scream into a pillow, you know, pound your feet on your bed. You have to. Anger, sadness, and, you know, a lot of these emotions are something that requires something physical from you in order to process it out. And so this is kind of a long way to get back to, you know, the emotional regulation is in being able to freely express and process your emotion honestly. So when I hit a point of rage, and I know what's leading to the rage before I get there. So I kind of, at this point, I know how to pull myself back and say, you know what's really happening and what's really building is fear, not rage. And rage is an emotion I experience when I want to feel powerful. That's the value of anger. It's not the original emotion, but it's an emotion that helps us to feel powerful. And you can actually use that and direct it to find your personal power, if you know how to channel it in a way that is not destructive. Yes. And so knowing how to regulate emotion by way of allowing yourself to feel it and express it appropriately is a gateway to your intuition. Because when you settle with it, you're able to go, oh, what am I really feeling? Oh, it's not actually anger. It's not actually overwhelm. It's fear. And it almost always comes back to this not enoughness. I'm like, I just feel like I'm not enough. I'm not good enough. There's not enough for me to go around. I'm not going to get my needs met, right? It's almost always that, because it's going to be more primal to whatever you were dealing with in the first 0 to 7 years of life. And then as far as the nervous system regulation, that's okay. When I recognize, you know, the honest emotion is fear. Okay, what do I need right now physically in order to regulate my body? Because the situation isn't going to be changing anytime soon. There's still crazy stuff going on in my life. It's not going anywhere. But what can I do right now to regulate my body so I'm processing the emotion appropriately and I'm holding space for where I am, where I've been, and where I'm going? And it's almost always like as simple as air and water. Like, okay, I need to breathe deeper, because physiologically you breathe more shallow when you're enraged, fearful, anxious. And sometimes we just need to take a drink of water. It's almost always just that simple. And it's like very childlike. When a child is very upset, you say, hold on, let's give you a glass of water. Take a couple deep breaths. That's how we coach young children, right?
Right.
When they're really, really upset. We need the same thing. And then it's in that we're able to really hear what's happening and really tap into what is my body really telling me right now? Because the anxiety, the fear might be coming from, well, I'm not in alignment. I'm doing a bunch of things that aren't really made for me. And I'm putting a lot of pressure on myself to keep doing them because I feel like that's what I'm supposed to do. But that's, I know in my soul, that's not what I'm supposed to do. And so that's where like the emotion and the regulation directs us on the right path. It allows us to tap into that intuition.
So there's people out there that say, well, I'm just naturally angry, or I'm just naturally depressed, or what feedback do you have for them for that?
I was one of
people like that too.
I've been one of those people. And, okay. And, hey, I suffered with clinical depression for 30 years. It was into my early 30s for sure that I was clinically depressed, and I was on medication for about a decade. And I just kind of figured that was, I actually did believe that that was a generational, oh, people in my family are depressed, that's how it goes, this is my lot in life. And you know, suicidal ideation and the whole thing, it was really bad. And so when people ask me about this and they're like, well, surely you don't mean that people who are depressed aren't really depressed, or they wouldn't have to be because that's just who they are. No, that's you being buried by something. It isn't you.
Right.
It's separate from you. We got to kind of see emotion like it's a vapor, like a cloud that's passing over, passing through, and we just are here to experience it. By the way, depression is just a suppressed anger.
Mm.
Probably about some injustice that happened.
Yeah.
That you either endured or witnessed. And if we're really honest about what that emotion is, then we can go into the anger. And most people, and I, even for myself, when I was in that phase of life, I would go to depression to keep myself from anger because, frankly, anger made me feel terrified. It really made me feel terrified because I wasn't sure what I was capable of if I really got to the root of that anger, because there were some severe injustices. And I was concerned that if I really, and I think on a subconscious level, if I really experienced that anger that about those injustices, that I might hurt myself or someone else in the process.
Mm.
This is also why it's really helpful to have a professional person to walk with you through it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, don't want to do this on your own.
No, not at all.
You can't go from here, you know, the very bottom emotions to the top joy, which would be just a split second on your own. You have to have help. And I know, like, going through years and years and years of depression until, like, you finally put it into focus for me that it's not like anxiety and depression. Mm. That's a mask for your feelings of what you really need to release and get out of you.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. It's a defense.
It's a defense.
It's a valid defense. Good job coping with that. And then, you know, and one, until the depression and anxiety become so much that you're like, okay, this isn't an effective way to cope anymore, then you probably will stay depressed and anxious. But if you get to the point where you're like, I'm ready, okay, I'm ready to get to the bottom core of this, then you'll never go back.
Yeah. No, sure. No, there's no going back.
Yeah.
Once you realize that you don't have to live like this,
right?
You can do better.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Yeah, absolutely. Cellular reprogramming is a fascinating concept. How can individuals work on reprogramming their cells to release old belief patterns and embrace new ones?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it's sort of like a joint effort between the emotional healing, the nervous system regulation, and cellular reprogramming. And what I mean by that is that, you know, you can recite affirmations all day. I think that is actually a really good starting place. Affirmations is a really good starting place, but you would have to, I recently saw a study on this, and it was like, in order to program new beliefs into your nervous system and cells, you would have to repeat those affirmations somewhere around 1 million times. That's a lot.
Yeah.
And if you've been repeating certain affirmations like, F my life, or I suck, for the past several decades, then imagine how long it would take you to reprogram I'm amazing and my life is amazing. It would take you a very long time to get those into your DNA. And so a lot of this is in how I've actually developed my own healing modality that is intended to release the traumas, restructure your nervous system so it can be open and ready. I'm not even talking about like making, you know, manifestation and making all the good things happen yet, just opening your nervous system for the good. And then thirdly, to make sure that this is programmed into your DNA so you're actually able to change your DNA. And there's been plenty of studies on this. There was even an article posted in Time magazine a couple years ago about how, no, we actually can rewrite our DNA. Yes. Right? So that's what I mean by cellular reprogramming. And that's, hey, I just kind of took like the best of all the things mm-hmm. that I've gone through for my own healing and put it into my own modality so that you don't have to spend the next 40 years of your life reciting the same mantras and forget somewhere. And you don't have to see, you know, like all your therapists and, you know, do 100 different things and take a bunch of supplements and all the groups and every, like, there's too many things. My whole point is to simplify this. So in cellular reprogramming, it's really using energy. Mm-hmm. It's a form of NLP or neuro-linguistic programming, or what I like to call neuro-linguistic reprogramming, or it's a little bit different than just programming, because you can deprogram what you've been programmed through that, but taking the best of all of those things, and it's very suggestive into the cells. Like, we're all being programmed at all times. Make no mistake. You're being programmed, even if you don't have anything going into your ears, from TV, radio, telephone, you are being programmed at all times by proximity of what you surround yourself with. And so we can do this the same way and get that into your cells, but it takes the emotional healing, the nervous system regulation, so you're open and ready, and then that stuff can get deep into your cells and rewrite your DNA for something new.
So you're basically opening up for the people to be able to receive that in.
Yes. Yeah. Because, you know, if I've had tons of people that come to me and said, well, I've done all this other stuff and it didn't work. I did mindset work and I did this other stuff and it just didn't work. And I'm like, well, there's a reason, because you can't do mindset work if your nervous system is closed to the new mindset that you're trying to put in there. So it is like a system, you know, you have to do it in order.
Yeah.
And you can't regulate your nervous system if you still have emotional traumas hanging out from the past. So you got to, and some of it is it's a joint effort. It's something that you're kind of doing all at once. But in the beginning, you just have to focus on releasing the old energy, the old emotional energy. And then you can kind of move into, well, your nervous system, we're going to open that up just little by little. You know, yeah. People, they say, well, why am I not manifesting money the way that I want to? Because your nervous system's not ready to receive that yet. It's okay. We can get it there. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I've been there. Yeah. We've had this conversation before.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
It's like, you have to receive it. You receive it. It's like, okay.
Right. You're like, what am I doing wrong? What's wrong with me? Oh no. See, we have now an emotional problem from a past trauma that's led you to believe you're not enough. And so you got to deal with that. And then we can maybe think about the money.
Yeah. So can you share some additional practical tips, techniques, or exercises that listeners can use to begin their own inner child healing journey?
Yeah, processing. So there's been scientific evidence that if you write something, if you write about a trauma 7 times, it releases differently. Mm. And some people say, well, I can't write. And I've been one of those people myself. And so I even have done a lot of what I call it's like word cloud processing. And so you don't even have to formulate sentences or thoughts. Just one word things, you can literally have the F word and love on the same page. Just like write it all over the place, make it messy, write words on top of words. Doesn't matter. Just process it out. Whether it's that or video logging yourself or voice recording rather, but processing those things that came up in your childhood. And this also helps shift you from spewing it out of you at everyone that comes into your path to going into a private place to really reflect. Because when you're projecting it at everyone at all times and you really see yourself as a victim and then everyone else around you knows it, that binds you and keeps you from real relationship. Mm-hmm. And that's the other portion of what I'm going to say about that, because in order to really heal the inner child, You have to see yourself as not being a victim.
Yes.
And that's the hardest part, is to de-victimize yourself and to say, well, and I in no way am saying that people aren't victimized. But what I'm saying is, when you attach that to your identity and you say, this is who I am. I was sexually abused, and that's who I am. There has to be a separation between what happened to you and who you are if you want any chance at healing.
Yes.
And so it's a constant effort, right, Alicia? Like, you know, yeah. It's like we're always having to go back and realize, like I'm seeing myself as a victim here. And I've found myself getting a little hot with maybe a customer service agent or two that didn't, you know, wasn't really hearing me. And one of my biggest childhood wounds is not being heard, right? And I'm like, you're not listening to me. And then I start getting a little hot. And then I have to peel myself back and go, you know what? It's not their problem that your childhood put you in a position to feel unheard. Mm-hmm. And no, they're not hearing you very well, but there's a better way that you can do this. And they're just here to reflect back to you what's already going on inside. They're not victimizing you. When you have that realization, you're like, oh gosh, everybody is reflecting my own self-image back to me. Well, snap.
That is such a quick way to get yourself out of the victimization, is to realize the things that life, what's coming at you, is there to reflect something back at you, that another layer to be pulled off.
Yes, absolutely.
Instead of taking the victim where things just keep happening to me because life is just so bad. Whereas it becomes more of an opportunity.
Oh yeah. And some of these are missed lessons. That's why we have to repeat them. Right. So when I hear somebody say, and I've said it, why does this always happen to me? And in more recent years, I go, well, what lesson am I deferring that it's going to just keep coming back if I don't learn it?
Those stinking lessons.
But obviously it is to guide me home to myself.
Yeah.
That's the purpose. It's the lesson keeps appearing because I'm out of alignment with myself. And when I learn the lesson, I come more into alignment with myself. So why don't I just yield to the lesson? Yeah, it stinks, hurts. I don't like it. I don't want to take responsibility, but I will anyway, because then I can take control back of my life where I haven't been in control.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about alignment, because most of my listeners probably understand, but there are some that are like, what are you talking about? What does it mean to be in alignment?
Yeah, so I kind of see us as like, you know, there is a source energy, right? And we can call it God. I actually do believe it's not just the universe, that it's like a personality. There's a personality of the universe. God is just a word, actually, that was, it's like a Hellenistic word that described pagan gods. So, you know, you call it spirit or source or whatever. But there is some personality. It's pretty clear. And so there's a part of it is that it's almost like, okay, we're souls having a human experience. So we've come into the human body. And regardless of what you believe, you know, Jesus said he was God, like purely God. Okay, well, let's just look at this for 1 second. If that's true, then God incarnates God's self into a body form. Why? One, so God can identify with human beings that God has created, and also so that God can show us how to do this human thing the way that we're supposed to really be doing it. So in other words, we can overcome the body. We're not tied to anything. We're not you know, like sickness, death, starvation, you know, we can live above the body on levels we haven't even begun to understand. Mm-hmm. So to be in alignment, okay, if we're basically like broken off pieces of God, we're like unique little expressions of God, and we're figuring out how to do this in the human body. There's the higher self, and then there's like the lower self, and the lower self isn't bad. It's just the part of us that in flesh hasn't figured out yet how to do this thing as a soul in a human body, a piece of God in a human body. And so to be in alignment, I think, is to be connected with the higher self on a deeper level. it doesn't mean that you never encounter the lower self, and it doesn't mean the lower self is bad. It just means the higher self is actually God itself. It's the original source.
Yeah.
You are your higher self, and it's not something that you have to go like way out far somewhere to find. You have it right there with you. So to be in alignment is to be better connected with that, so you know. And it doesn't even have to make sense to you. Like when things come up and you're, you know, there's a fork in the road and you're like this way or that, and you don't know which one to choose. When you're connected with your higher self, there's like kind of this knowing like, okay, if I go this direction, that seems in all human standards, like that would be the best choice, but there's something calling me and drawing me over to this other place that doesn't make sense. It's like, you know, picking a job. Well, this one pays $200,000 and this one pays $50,000. Well, obviously I'm going to choose the one 200,000, right? But no, my higher self is slowing me down. My higher self says, yes, but there's actually something bigger for you, this other direction. The lower self may also say, well, I don't think I'm capable and ready to receive $200,000 a year. So no, I don't need that much, and talk ourselves out of it. Mm-hmm. So you really have to like get to a place where you can hear that and you know it feels right for some reason. It
That's
doesn't
intuitively, yeah.
Yes, back to the intuition.
It's like, that's intuition to me. Yeah.
That's what it is. It's like, well, yeah. Okay, I know what to do, and I know like where my fears are coming up, and my fear is either drawing me to or away from something, and I got to set fear aside for the moment and just hear what is real.
Mm.
Not that fear isn't real, because it's valid, but that's not all reality. That's just from your experience. That's all. It's very subjective. So then you can catch it from a place of objectivity.
That's good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So what are some common challenges or obstacles that people encounter when trying to connect with their inner knowing, and how can they overcome them?
Yeah, I think it's probably just more of the, you know, what I just mentioned about fear. Like fear could keep you just as readily as your intuition could guide you to $50,000, or your fear could keep you away from $200,000. And so I think that, again, when people do things out of order, and they're trying to implement mindset without doing the healing or the nervous system regulation, that's where people can get tangled up with this. And then they can't see what from what when they're trying to make decisions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it really goes down to healing all those portions of yourself.
Yeah. And accepting the things aren't ready to heal yet too, because there may be things that, typically what I see in energy healing is, you know, people, the energy healer is like, I see it there. And because energy healers are empaths and they want things to be fixed right away, they want to just eliminate that out. And one of the things I've noticed is, but it makes it worse when you try to do that. And sometimes there's part of us that isn't quite ready, and it's okay that we're not ready. We're not supposed to be at the end until we're at the end.
Yeah. It's going up that scale again. You can't go from 0 to 20.
Right. That's right.
Without going through the steps and feeling the feelings and processing through it.
Right.
Yeah.
That's right. And I think also like there's, you know, common saying, the only way out is through. And truly, the only way out is in.
Mm-hmm.
That means you might be in and there's darkness in there. And that's actually, you know, part of your experience in this life is the darkness. And so it's not to get out of the darkness. That's not the point. It's to know how to endure it and still be regulated, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Still be aligned.
Right. Right.
Yeah. Awesome. So could you elaborate on some cultural and societal influence that impact our sense of self and intuition?
Yeah. I think people abuse, well, it's science. They really abuse that, and they act like science is the ultimate. Well, about 150 years ago, there was a guy, a scientist, Louis Pasteur, who had discovered microorganisms that he recognized as a toxic, like a pathogen, germination, germs in a microscope. And he was notifying people, these are really causing a lot of problems and you have to wash your hands. And they're doing surgeries and going from surgery to surgery, patient to patient, and not washing their hands. They didn't have gloves and they're not washing their hands. Yeah, it might be like, you know, dip your hands in water or something, but even dipping your hands in water gets 70% of the germs off. But they just thought he was crazy. And that was only 150 years ago, guys. Oh my gosh. They thought he was nuts. And here he was like, no, I'm telling you, there's these little germs. And they're like, what are you? You're nuts. You're crazy. And so when people talk about science, you know, and he was a scientist, but people had their ideas. People can use anything they want. If you go to Google, you can type in, are eggs bad for me? And you'll find all the stuff about eggs being bad for you. And you can, are eggs good for me? And you'll find all the stuff that eggs are good for you, right? And so there's kind of an algorithm in the universe that caters to whatever you already believe and think.
Yeah.
And there was a study, a pretty intensive study done, I don't know, 30 years ago or something. And it indicated that eggs were kind of bad for you. Like they raise your cholesterol. And then maybe 5 or 6 years later, another study comes out, eggs are good for you. All right. Well, that study was paid for by the egg industry, by the way, the second one. So you really have to look deeper into what's going on, and you can't just like go read somebody wrote a blog and maybe put a couple links to some other studies or other blogs and believe that something that's, you know, completely factual. Nothing is completely factual in science because you have to come at it with a critical mind. And just because there's an indication that shows some kind of evidence that doesn't mean that that is the final say, because we're going to find some other angle at some point and it's a loophole and it takes us into something else. Even Einstein's fourth dimension, you know, the quantum stuff is now pretty outdated, and it was very ahead of its time. And now there are scientists that are finding even more and more. So I think that the cultural stuff and social stuff is, oh, well, it's science. And so that cuts us off from possibility because, oh, well, it's proven that. No, nothing is proven. You can say that it's proven. Legally, you can say that. But there may be another angle. Like, I'm not going to rat on any kind of diets or anything, but like a high fat, high protein diet, I'll say, I won't name any in particular. And people say, oh, well, it's proven that when you have this level of fat, it helps your gut, your brain, and all kinds of things. Negating that, yeah, well, it's also proven that that level of fat and protein causes heart disease and strokes and a number of other problems. All right. So you really have to look at things from a non-judgmental position, not assuming that you know the answer and being ready for possibly learning something or something being there that you didn't intend to find. And I think that that helps quite a bit, you know, when we kind of look at it like that and people are kind of pushing around, well, you know, if you get this vaccine, it's good. No, it's bad. It's like back and forth. You're the only one who can really know the truth for yourself about what you need to do. And so there is no such thing as hard science. There's no such thing as hard science. Science is simply a strategy to understand. That's right. It's not like written in stone forever, because guess what? They're going to find something else and it's going to change.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Depending on what year we're in.
Right.
Where their influences are going on.
Right. And where we are in humanity, because we're not, you know, like 150 years ago, people weren't ready to hear about germs. They just weren't. And then, you know, maybe 60 years later, people were like, oh, snap, that guy was right. I mean, he died in a mental institution because people told him he was crazy and he actually went crazy. But, you know, a little while later, people go, oh, shoot, we actually do need to wash our hands in between. So they just weren't ready for it.
We're getting sick.
Right.
Yeah, I completely get that. So your holistic approach involves various energy healing modalities. Can you explain how these modalities complement traditional healing practices and contribute to holistic wellness?
Yeah. So my mother was a nutritionist and herbalist and a physical trainer. And she still does an incredible job of taking good care of herself. Both my parents eat really well, and you know, they eat a vegan, no oil diet and exercise and the whole bit. And she was always all about the herbs and the vitamins and different things like that. And that's all great. But considering what I've already mentioned about my childhood, and I've already spoken to my parents about this, so I know even if they heard this, they wouldn't be upset.
You're right.
Because we've had all the conversations, but you could put all the green stuff in your body that you want. You can have, like, you know, yoga every day, sound baths. You could be doing 100,000 things. Mm-hmm. But if you don't really deal with the three things, the healing, emotional healing, the nervous system regulation, and then reprogramming yourself, none of that matters. And there was a really wonderful documentary that came out, I don't know, maybe 12-ish years ago, called Heal. And you can really see that in real time in some of the people that they have in that documentary. One of the women, she was, like, you know, yoga instructor, juices every morning, all kinds of things like that. And then she gets cancer. And so it really points to the necessity to deal with the emotional stuff. And so that's where the modality that I've created, and that I use on people, I think is more comprehensive and really hits it from the different angles. And I know that someone is not really a good fit to work with me when they kind of just want a blanket quick fix,
yeah,
or when they want, they just want it to go away. And I validate the impatience because I know what it's like to be in that position, and you're so tired, you just want it to go away.
Mm-hmm.
But also, you know, you can look at lots of people, even Louise Hay, wonderful, like the contribution that she gave to us in holistic healing. And she got cancer, and she even recognized, you know, she had had sexual trauma in her childhood. And she's like, yeah, whoa, I need to go back and deal with that. And she did heal from cancer, and she didn't, as far as I remember, she didn't receive any kind of Western medicine treatment, but she recognized that she really had to deal with that stuff on a deeper level. So I think you can really put yourself into, like, one thing or the other, but unless you're really doing that deeper work, it's only going to get you so far.
Yeah. It's still, so people could explain, like, Western medicine is a band-aid. But people can also take Eastern, for like yoga and Ayurveda, all this stuff. You can take that, and it can also be a band-aid if you're not doing the inner work with it as well. So we're 100%. band-aiding. We're like, we're taking this yoga class, but we're like, why are we still stressed out? We're going into, you know, this, that is doing all this other stuff. It's like, why are we okay for an hour, and then it comes right back?
Yeah, it's rubber bands. And mm-hmm. I've even seen that with energy healing.
Yeah.
Early on, I took on pretty much everybody because I just wanted to experience and see what I could figure out. And there were some people, I mean, they came to me already having done a ton of stuff, and I'm releasing energies out and seeing, like, literally seeing them rubber band right back.
Yeah.
And I'm like, why did that happen? And I really had to get reflective over, like, what was the root of why it wouldn't just go away?
Yeah.
Like, what was holding it? And, you know, that's kind of how I ended up branching out to make it the three pillars of how I do the energy healing. And I don't want to say energy healing, but the healing modality that I've created, because I realized that you really can't get very far. Same with, you know, just plain old coaching. You know, you get a coach, and, well, that's only going to get you so far, because it only goes as far as you're willing to go. And if the coach isn't really willing to get deep enough with you,
yeah,
then you're not going to get very far. So it's both and. And, you know, oftentimes we hire people thinking, oh, this will be the solution. This will really help. And it's rarely the case. It rarely is the case for people. And then people go, oh, just nothing works for me. I'm a lost cause and I'm unfixable. And that's, of course, that's not the case. I don't believe that.
Right.
But it's, you know, it's the, it has to be a mix of all.
Yeah.
But ultimately that's it.
And sometimes the things, you know, for certain times of your life that work better than other times of your life.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, like you said, it's a mixture of everything. You can't really just, there's only one thing that's going to heal you.
No. So
really combining, to me, it's Eastern and Western. Like if you get into the holistic wellness portion of it, it's combining some of those principles together to create an overall healing.
Totally. And I nearly died from a acute asthma a few years ago, just popped up like out of nowhere. I had gone through a divorce and, you know, I recognized I was holding a lot of grief in my lungs, but I seriously nearly died. And I opted at that time to take steroids and the inhalers and all of that, because I knew, okay, there's some stuff I have to figure out, but if I don't get on top of this, like immediately, like on a physical level, then I might not be here. And I didn't want my kids to find me dead, you know, next morning type of thing. And so I did that while I was doing the deeper inner work. Now I also came up with a very severe bout of asthma earlier this year. I was really disappointed, because I was like, I thought I just like kicked this thing, you know, but I know why it happened. I could trace the stressors that were pushing my immunity to be at a level that would, and then I went away and stayed in an Airbnb, and there was like dog hair and dander in there, and it just sort of like inflamed it. Well, it wasn't just the dog hair. I know exactly what happened. But the previous time I got rid of asthma in 2.5 months, and this time I got rid of it in 5 days. And that was from having asthma attacks every 15 minutes. And so with no drugs this time.
Wow.
So there is a place though. It's like, hey, if my spleen's hanging out, my mother has a pacemaker. I'm so grateful for Western medicine, because I couldn't make her heart. She's still working on, like, you know, get her heart to do it on its own.
Yeah.
She's doing the deeper inner work, but she has the Western medicine to like sustain her while she's figuring it out. Praise God.
Yeah. It's such a place. And you go back with the battles back and forth of it. So
yeah,
that you wonder, like, coming from that perspective of it.
Yeah.
So as we kind of wrap this up, what are some key takeaways and insights you hope listeners will gain from our conversation about self-trust and then coming home to themselves?
Yeah. Well, I hope that probably the main thing, if you haven't heard anything else, because we've talked about a lot, so this is, and I can sort of drone on about things and add a lot of info, but I really hope that the main thing is that people have a subconscious memory suddenly that they're not a lost cause, that they can overcome anything, that they will overcome anything, and that maybe you don't really need to be fixed necessarily. You know, because I get a lot of that, like, well, am I fixable? I've done all this stuff, and am I fixable? Maybe you don't really need to be fixed. I think self-trust is a challenging thing, because when you've made choices, like I chose a spouse that I really regretted. I knew before I married him that I shouldn't have done that. And so that level of self-trust is like, that really breaks things down quite a bit. And it takes a long time to recover from that self-trust. But the other thing about self-trust is, when we hold proper boundaries for ourselves with others, that helps fortify that self-trust. So that means not saying yes when you actually mean no.
Hmm.
Not saying yes when you aren't sure. If you can't 100% say yes, then it has to be a no. And that means that, yes, you'll disappoint people, or their perception of you may change and they might not like you as much. But isn't it worse for you to not like yourself and not trust yourself than it is for anybody else to not like you? I've learned that the hard way. And I've had to like learn, okay, no, if I'm going to have a chance at trusting myself, I'm the only one who has to live with myself.
Yeah.
And what I do in my own head and in secret matters everywhere. And that means, even when, if I set an alarm, I don't wake up to an alarm anymore, but if I set an alarm and I say I'm going to wake up at 6:30 a.m. and I set that alarm, and the alarm goes off at 6:30 a.m. and I hit the snooze button, I know that seems so minor, but it's a little piece of your self-trust chipped away every time when you say you're going to do something. Now there's a whole other side of that that we get into a conversation. I won't dig too deep into it, but there's like, you know, sometimes we don't do what we say we're going to do because we're actually not ready for it and we're expecting too much of ourselves. Yeah. That's not what I'm saying. But what I'm saying is that you, in order to reestablish self-trust, you have to say no when you really mean no.
Yeah.
And say yes only when you 100% mean yes. And that's like across the board for everything. And by the way, we're also teaching our children how to trust themselves when we establish self-trust with ourselves. It's not telling them. It's showing them, no, I said this and my word means something. And I know you don't like it right now, but that's what I meant. And that's how it is. And that goes for all relationships, really. And that is the thing that really brings us back to ourselves, to trust ourselves and to know. And I guarantee if you're doing that, your intuition is going to start opening up. You're going to start really going, okay, well, I got people falling off the train here. That's fine. You're making room for new, but, yeah. But I have a strong sense of who I am. I know where I'm going. And I know that when I say something, I mean it. And when I think something and I believe something, I have the power to redirect it anytime I want to.
Yeah. That builds such confidence in people.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you so much. All of your information will be in the show notes so people can reach out to you if they want to continue the conversation, learn more about the amazing stuff that you're doing. I highly recommend people to check it out for sure. So thank you, Joy. It's been a pleasure. Yeah.
Thank you so much, Alicia. I really appreciate you.